Well, let's return to Afghanistan now. Tomorrow marks the 10th anniversary of the US air bombings in Afghanistan aimed at removing the Taliban regime and capturing or killing Osama bin Laden. A decade on, the Taliban-led insurgency continues. As we heard earlier, six people have been arrested after an alleged plot to assassinate Afghan President Hamid Karzai was foiled. After all the years of war, poverty and unrest, Afghanistan is one of the most dangerous places on earth for children to be born. They face high mortality rates, low immunization, nutritional deficiencies. But not all bad news. The access to education has improved substantially over the past decade, especially for girls, of course, who were banned from class under Taliban rule. Rebecca Barber is the Afghan policy advisor with the charity Save the Children. She's just spent 3 months in Afghanistan. She's with us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what's daily life like for children in Afghanistan compared to 10 years ago?
It varies. I mean, it's very different for children in Kabul and for children in the provinces. And as you've just said, there have been some very, very positive developments in the lives of children. The number of children in school is absolutely the most standout achievement, with the enrollment rates having improved sevenfold in the last 10 years, which is an enormous achievement. But as you've also just said, health indicators and basic development indicators for children are still among the lowest in the world. One in nine children die before their first birthday, and almost one in five die before their fifth birthday. Access to basic health care for children is still incredibly low. And even though enrollment rates have increased astronomically in the last 10 years, the number of children in school who actually don't attend school on a regular basis is still incredibly high.
So what percentage, what numbers do we have of Afghan kids going to school, and what are the literacy rates that come from it?
There's more than 7 million children in school today, up from 1 million under the Taliban, which is an enormous increase. The number of girls in school has increased from almost nothing in the Taliban to nearly 3 million today, but there's still almost 4 million children across Afghanistan who don't have access to education at all, and most of those children who don't have any access to education are girls.
You've mentioned the health problems, a problem primarily at the primary care, not so much hospitals or doctors, but simple community-based primary health care. 550 children die of preventable disease every day. What kind of diseases are the killers?
It's primarily pneumonia and diarrhea, so diseases that are very, very easily preventable if children have access to basic health work, but basic health care. So something as simple as access to a community health worker can make an enormous difference and can save thousands of lives. There's an estimated shortage of around 10,000 health workers across Afghanistan, which is an example of a very, very simple and quite costly intervention that can make an enormous difference and save thousands of lives.
How cheap is it to train a primary healthcare worker?
Our staff in Afghanistan estimate that it costs around $350 to train a community health worker. There's presumably other costs associated with sort of supporting that health worker on an ongoing basis. But it's, as I said, a very cheap intervention that can make an enormous difference.
Of course, though, the gains in Afghanistan are so often offset by problems with governance. What have you found there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, education is an example of this because, as we said, enrollment rates have increased markedly, but a lot of children who are officially enrolled in school can't go to school because of security, because they don't feel safe to travel to school. So, yeah, in the absence of basic governance and basic security, then even when services are there being provided, children can't access them.
The Australian government will have spent almost $1 billion on aid as we approach the decade of involvement in Afghanistan. Afghanistan is among the top 10 recipients of Australian aid. How is that aid money progressing in terms of helping?
The Australian government's aid program has been quite effective and has had a substantial impact. The Australian government has spent a lot, has put a lot towards health and education, so it has certainly played an important role in those gains that have been made. But as is the case with most of the big international donors, a lot of the Australia's contribution towards Afghanistan has been tied to the deployment of the international troops, which is one of the problems that we have seen in Afghanistan across the country over the past decade. The linking of humanitarian assistance and development assistance with donor countries' military and strategic objectives.
And in addition, that means the money is administered by defence rather than by charities.
In some cases, yes. So the Australian government has aid projects that are administered by AusAid, Australia's aid program, which are closely monitored and well evaluated and in most cases quite effective. And there's also aid money that is administered by the ADF, the Defence Forces, and there's much less transparency and monitoring evaluation around that proportion of Australia's aid budget.
But isn't transparency and evaluation a luxury that can only be enjoyed once the war ends?
Well, no, not at all. I mean, it's all Australia taxpayers' money, and the public has a right, and the Afghan communities have a right to know what is the impact of that money, whether it's administered by AusAid or whether it's administered by the Defence Forces.
Rebecca Barber, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks so much.
And Rebecca Barber from Save the Children's Afghanistan Policy Division on ABC Radio National Breakfast.